Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes. But right now, John Lund stars as yours truly, Johnny Deller, billed as America's favorite insurance investigator, at least on radio. This from May 25th, 1954, on CBS. It's the punctilious firebug matter.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum presents for your listening enjoyment, John Lund as...
Johnny Deller.
Jeff Connors, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Jeff. I haven't heard from
what
you.
What are the chances of you making it down here to Dallas real fast-like, huh?
Well, I never knew you to be in a hurry, Jeff.
It's a firebug, Johnny. Four fires in 4 weeks. Total claims to date, 95,000. This keeps up, I ain't got no job left. You just gotta get out of here tonight.
You're kind of rushing things, aren't you?
Well, it ain't me, Johnny O. It's the firebug. Thought you'd like to be here when number five goes up. That means you gotta be in on the 10 o'clock flight.
Don't tell me he works on schedule.
Every Tuesday night at 11 o'clock, whoosh. What do you say, pal?
I'll be there.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you John Lund in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Friends, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum present these weekly adventures of Johnny Dollar because they know that millions of you enjoy Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Eastern Indemnity and Fire Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the punctilious firebug matter. Expense account item one, $113.20. Airfare between Hartford and Dallas, Texas. Your Southwestern States manager, Jeff Connors, met the 10 o'clock flight at Love Airport and drove me down to your offices on South Acard Street.
There they are, Johnny. Number one, candy store out northwest. Number two, two family residence on the east side. Three, small factory out on Commerce Avenue. And four, garage and repair shop out southwest. Grand total of claims is 95,000, and it's all yours.
These all follow the same time pattern. Huh?
Everyone. Comes Tuesday night around 11 o'clock, and that firebug just naturally lights up.
All new policies, Jeff. Written within the past 6 weeks to 2 months.
That's right. Ink hardly gets cold on the premium checks when it gets all hotted up again on the claims.
Any connection between the policyholders?
Can't find one if there is. All in different businesses, different parts of the city. Whole thing just don't make sense.
It does if the bug is in your own organization.
Yeah, that's what Len Borchardt says.
Who's Borchardt?
Detective Lieutenant Arson Division. He's been working on it.
Well, how's he making out?
Well, I got 10 men out in the field, 2 gals in the office here, lots of alibis to check out. Takes time. So far, there's no reason to suspect anybody.
Those fires are reason enough.
But, man, why'd anybody want to do anything like that?
Well, when it comes to firebugs, who knows? Could have a grudge against you or the company.
Or maybe just like to see them flames shoot up, huh?
That's as good a reason as any.
Well, whatever it is, we sure got to get this boy, Johnny. If this kind of thing keeps up, I'll be losing my job, my home, my wife, and everything else I... What's the time, Johnny?
It's 4 minutes after 11.
Wouldn't want to lay a little bet why this phone's ringing at this time of night, would you? Eastern Indemnity, Connors. Yeah, that figured. Where did I get that address? That's, wait a minute. That's 725 East Westchester. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, thanks, Lieutenant. Be seeing you.
Number five?
Yep. Big apartment building out in Westchester.
You're sure it's one of yours?
Wrote the policy on it myself 4 days ago.
Well, let's get out there and have a look, huh?
Man, that's sure a goner.
Yeah, there's another one you can write off.
You can say... Oh, there's Len Borchardt over there. Didn't know he'd be down here so quick.
Well, let's hear what he's got to say.
Yeah, sure. Hi, Lieutenant. You got down here right fast.
Seemed reasonable to you, Mr. Connors. Nothing there's much I can do before she cools down. I won't be before morning.
I'd like you to meet Johnny Dollar, Lieutenant. One of our investigators from the East. Johnny, this Lieutenant Lamborghini.
Glad to know you, Lieutenant.
Looks like our firebug didn't waste any time showing himself off to you, Mr. Dollar.
No question about it being torched.
Well, like I said, I won't be able to get in there until morning. But when you figure the pattern, the way that fire roared up and took hold, no doubt in my mind.
Who reported it?
A fellow by the name of Hendrickson. At the second floor apartment west. Called in from a hallway telephone.
What kind of a story did he give you?
He didn't. Got trapped up there on the second floor. Suffering third-degree burns and shock. He's not in any shape to talk to anyone. Don't know that I care to be around when he is fit to talk, though.
Oh, why's that?
His wife and two kids. They're still in that fire somewhere.
Jeff Connors went back to the office to wire his preliminary report to Hartford, while I stayed around to see if anything would turn up. By 1:30 a.m., the only thing we learned was that our only possible witness, Hendrickson, had died en route to the hospital. A preliminary check of the wreckage seemed to indicate that the fire had started in the basement, but it was still too hot to check into thoroughly, so Lieutenant Borchard drove me back downtown.
I'll dig into it in the morning, Dollar. I can tell you right now what I'll find.
Oh, what's that, Lieutenant?
There'll be four or five hot spots indicating the use of kerosene, gasoline, something like that. An amount of paraffin drippings.
Sounds like a candle's used for a slow fuse.
That's what we figured. Found the same drippings in all the other fires.
Any idea how slow a fuse it is?
Looks like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Gives a bug plenty of time to get away, fix himself up, and alibi somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Connor says you think it's someone in his organization.
Old pattern points that way. Haven't been able to run him down, though.
Takes a lot of legwork.
Uh-huh. Connors has been a big help. Cooperating right down the line. You known him long, Dollar?
Oh, 4 or 5 years, off and on. He's a good man.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to be letting his personal troubles interfere with his work any.
What personal troubles are those?
Oh, he's been pretty broke for the past 6 months or so. Wife's been sick. Run up a lot of doctor and hospital bills. Had to buy a new home recently.
Oh, why's that?
Last one burned down. Lost his 8-month-old son in that fire. Been pretty rough going for him.
Yeah.
Well, when we get this firebug pinned down, might help him some. Take some of the pressure off, relieve his mind, maybe. Here you are, Dollar.
Oh, thanks, Lieutenant.
Check with me in the morning, Dollar, and think over what I've been saying. Maybe something will come to mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll think about it. I had Borchard drop me off at your office building. I figured I'd pick up my bag and talk things over with Jeff before checking into a hotel. I let myself in with a key Jeff had given me and headed for his inner office. Oh. Well, good morning.
Who are you?
Johnny Dollar. Mean anything to you?
Johnny Dollar? Oh, and you're that insurance investigator Mr. Connors said was coming out from the East.
That's right.
Well, I'm plenty happy to hear that. You gave me a pretty bad start, Mr. Dollar.
I'm sorry.
I'm Sally Martin, Mr. Connors' secretary.
And the rest of it?
Oh, you mean what I'm doing up here?
Well, I'm as curious as the next guy.
Well, I promised to have some material ready for Mr. Connors in the morning. I left the office tonight in such a hurry I forgot it, and well, just drop by to get it ready for him.
Well, you're a pretty conscientious employee, Miss Martin. Getting out of bed at 2 a.m. to come down to the office for something like that.
Oh, no. Wasn't that way at all.
Well, what way was it?
Well, I had a date this evening. Dinner, theater, and the Club Romulo just down the street. Stopped up here on my way home.
Mm-hmm. Is this the material Mr. Connors wanted ready in the morning?
Yes, it is.
Comprehensive fire policy on the property at 725 East Westchester.
That's right.
That's pretty coincidental, isn't it?
What?
Or maybe you didn't know that there was a fire out there tonight.
A fire at the... Oh, no.
Any idea why Mr. Connors wanted this particular policy out?
I think if you have any more questions to ask Mr. Dollar, Mr. Connors should be here to answer them personally.
That sounds reasonable. And maybe we should ring in Lieutenant Borchard, too.
Lieutenant Bo...
Hey, Sally, what's keeping you so long? Oh, hi. Didn't know anyone else was up here with you.
Well, this is Johnny Dollar, one of our investigators, Bill. Mr. Dollar, this is Bill Trendler.
Well, glad to know you, Mr. Dollar.
I was telling Mr. Dollar about the wonderful time we had tonight. Dinner, then the theater, and being at the Club Romulo until just a few minutes ago.
Huh? Oh, yeah, that's right. We did have a swell time. But, honey, it's getting late, so if you're ready, let's run along.
Okay, Bill. Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Glad to meet you, Dollar. Hope to see you again sometime.
Being a firm believer in the ability of my subconscious to resolve any knotty problems, I checked into the Baker Hotel for the night. The bed was very comfortable, but my subconscious didn't come up with a thing. Expense account item 2, $3.75. Texas-style breakfast, including steak and pan-fried potatoes. That supplied me with enough energy to walk over to City Hall and look in on Lieutenant Borchardt.
There was a little hit-and-run accident at the corner of Westchester and Gates about 9 o'clock last night, Dollar. It's just half a block away from where the fire was. Seems a 53 Ford stand parked down the street there suddenly took off without lights. Spun around the corner and tore the fender off another car coming up the street.
You think there's some tie-in between that and the fire?
Well, one of the boys in traffic thought so after a witness gave him the license number of the Ford. He checked it through motor vehicle.
Who's it registered to?
Jeff Connors.
The traffic division's report of the hit-and-run accident on Westchester the night before added nothing to what Lieutenant Borchardt had already told me. Jeff Connors' Ford had been parked halfway down the block. At approximately 9:05 p.m., it roared away from the curb without lights, turned the corner onto Gates, smashed into the side of another car some 10 feet from the intersection, and kept right on going.
There's got to be some reason for Connors being there just 2 hours before the fire, and for taking off in such an old fire to hurry that way without lights.
Well, let's get Jeff's side of the story before we jump to conclusions, Lieutenant.
I don't believe much in coincidence, Mr. Dollar. Time element checks out, too.
The 2 hours between the accident and the fire?
We know those candle fuses burn an hour and a half to 2 hours. Leaving here at 9 gave him plenty of time to ditch the car and meet you at the airport with a pretty clean alibi. He wasn't driving a Ford when he picked you up, was he?
No, it was a Plymouth Coupe.
Yeah, well, that's his wife's car.
Well, what have you done about getting him in?
Well, he's not at home and he's not at his office. Nothing else I could do but send out a pickup on him.
Uh-huh. Leave word for me at the Baker Hotel when you get him, will you?
Sure thing, Mr. Dollar. I know how you're feeling about it. I'm sure sorry.
Expense account item 3, $2.25. Cab fare out to the modern subdivision where Jeff Connors had his new home. Mrs. Connors turned out to be a sweet, nice-looking young woman whose recent illness was still apparent.
I'm sorry you had the long ride out here for nothing, Mr. Dollar. Jeff's not home. He left early to get his car fixed or something. Too bad you didn't call first.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. Connors. It's you I wanted to see.
Oh, yes. Well, I guess I knew that. It's about Jeff, isn't it? And those fires.
That's right.
And you've noticed it, too. The terrible things worry and sorrow can do to a man. Well, until 6 months ago, Jeff was the happiest man I'd ever known. And then, well, our world just fell apart.
That's when your home burned, Mrs. Connors?
When we lost our son. Hmm. Something happened to Jeff then. Oh, it happened to me, too. I broke down. Had to be hospitalized. But with Jeff, well, it was different.
How do you mean?
He bottled everything up inside of him, refused to let it come out, never even talked about it. A person can't do that, Mr. Dollar.
You mentioned the recent fires, Mrs. Connors. Any particular reason why?
Yes. That's what has me worried so. Ever since they started, he's become terribly depressed. I'm afraid he's going to break down under the strain.
That's the only reason you mentioned him?
Yes. I've tried to do everything in my power to help him. I thought perhaps if we moved away from Dallas, it might help. But he wouldn't do that. Then I tried to get him interested in sports. That brought the first encouraging sign I've had in 6 months.
Oh, what was it, Mrs. Connors?
Well, usually on Monday and Tuesday nights, Jeff brings work home with him. All the mail that's accumulated over the weekend, the new premiums and renewals and so on.
Uh-huh.
Well, for the past 5 weeks, Mr. Dollar, believe it or not, Jeff has gone bowling every Tuesday night. He's become so enthused about it, why, he hasn't come home before midnight on any Tuesday evening since. Now, don't you think that's encouraging, Mr. Dollar?
Expense account item 4, $15.75. Cab fare in and around the city of Dallas. I spent the rest of the day checking the neighborhoods where the fires had occurred, talking to policyholders, neighbors, anyone who might give me a new or different slant. I came up with nothing. Around 5 o'clock, I called in to Lieutenant Borchard.
Still the same answer, Mr. Dollar. Haven't been able to pick up Connors yet. We checked out Sally Martin and Bill Trendler, though.
Anything there?
Nope. It was dinner, theater, and the Club Romulo, just like they said.
Yeah, I see.
For a while there, it looked like something might have tied in. Trendler used to work for Connors, you know.
Trendler was with Eastern Indemnity?
Until about 2 months ago, yeah. Left then to start a business of his own, a bowling alley.
Expense account item 5, $1.60. Cab fare to Trendler's bowling emporium on East Gatto Street. 5 alleys and a drink and sandwich bar. Trendler was keeping score for a couple of high school bobby soxers over on alley number 3.
Don't let it get you down, honey. It happens to the best of us. Pick off one of them anyway.
Can I talk to you for a minute, Mr. Trendler?
What? Oh, it's you. The insurance man, Johnny Dollar, isn't it?
That's right.
What's on your mind, Dollar?
I'd like to talk to you for a minute.
About the fires?
Yeah.
Take over for the girls, Jim. We'll be right back. Let's go in the office, Dollar. Let's have it, Dollar.
You used to work for Jeff Connors at Eastern.
Yeah, sure. Up until 2 months ago.
Why did you quit?
I just wasn't cut out to be a good insurance salesman.
So you opened this bowling alley.
Anything wrong with that?
Well, they tell me it takes money to open these things.
I had a few bucks saved.
From not being a good insurance salesman?
Why the interest in my finances, Dollar?
Well, I'm just curious.
So be curious about something else, huh?
Okay. Did Jeff Connors ever come bowling here?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Jeff's wife says he's been bowling every Tuesday night.
I wouldn't know. The last time I saw him was 4 weeks ago last night.
Any idea where he might have been those other Tuesday nights?
Why not ask Sally Martin?
What's she got to do with it?
She's his secretary. She was with him the times he came here. Maybe they figured out something better to do with their Tuesday nights.
She was out with you last night.
Yep. Every minute from 6 o'clock till 2:15. Dinner, theater, Club Romulo.
Well, you can always walk out of the theater before the final curtain. And a $10 bill can make a nightclub waiter pretty confused about time.
It'd be kind of hard to prove anything like that, wouldn't it, Dollar?
Well, there's no law against trying. Expense account item 6, $1.80. Cab fare back to your offices. They were closed for the night. At the Baker Hotel, I put a call into Sally Martin's apartment and got no answer. While I was trying to figure out the next move, Lieutenant Borchard called and made up my mind for me.
Be out front in 2 minutes, Dollar. I'll pick you up.
Where are we going, Lieutenant?
Out near the viaduct over the Trinity River.
What's out there? Another fire?
Nope. Jeff Connors Ford in 12 feet of water.
Took about an hour for a mobile crane to get there, and another 35 minutes before the grappling hooks got a solid hold and swung the car up onto dry land. Borchard and I were beside the car almost before the crane put it down.
Well, that's a big help.
Disappointed, Lieutenant?
Would have helped if he'd been in the car. Cost money to drag a river like this.
I don't think you'll find him down there.
Well, we gotta look.
On his way back to City Hall, Borchard dropped me off at the hotel. On a hunch, I went across the street and had a little talk with the night elevator man in your office building.
Well, now, let's see. Seems to me somebody went up to Eastern Indemnity since closing time. Yep, here it is. Checked in at 8:17, out again at 8:23. Sally Martin it was.
Anyone with her?
Come to think of it, there was a fellow waiting outside in the car. Say now, I'm just wondering. Could it be it was Mr. Connors himself?
Expense account item 7. $6.90 for a fast cab ride out to Sally Martin's apartment. The extra 5 was for the speed.
Yes, what... Mr. Dollar.
Where is he, Sally?
Where's who?
Jeff Connors. Is he still here?
Then you know?
That he was hiding here today? Let's say I guessed. All right, where is he?
I don't know.
Now, look. There have been 5 fires and 3 people are dead.
You're hurting my arm, Mr. Dollar.
I want to know what you were doing up at the office and where Jeff went when he left here.
We went up there to get a list of the new policies that came in today.
Why? What did Jeff want with them?
I don't know.
Well, there was some reason. What was it?
I tell you, I don't know. When I got back here tonight and told him Mrs. Connors had called about the new policies, he made me drive right down.
His wife called the office?
Well, Mrs. Connors always did that. Double-checked the policies with me because of the files he kept at home.
What was different about her call this time?
Well, nothing. Except the day, maybe. She always called on Tuesdays. There wasn't any real reason for her to call today. Only one new policy had come in.
A fire policy?
Yes, on an apartment building out on the west side.
Where is it?
Look, Mr. Dollar, I know what you're thinking. But Jeff didn't have anything to do with those fires. Believe me.
Where's the policy, Sally?
Over there, on the table.
Expense account item 8, $7.50. Cab fare with speed to the newly insured apartment building on the west side. I called Lieutenant Borchard from Sally's, and he was there waiting for me. You spotted him yet, Lieutenant?
Yeah. Parked Miss Martin's car back there in the alleyway.
When are you going to take him?
We're just waiting for you.
Okay, let's go.
There it is, Donna.
Yeah.
Keep your hands on the wheel, Connors.
Don't worry, Lieutenant. I won't try anything.
You expecting us, Jeff?
No. Matter of fact, I was hoping you wouldn't show, Johnny. I wanted to handle this myself.
You've been handling it that way too long, Connors.
Yeah, I guess I have. I wasn't really sure till I saw the car last night. Read about the hit run in the morning papers.
Is that why you dumped it in the river?
Didn't make much sense, I guess. Trying to cover up that way, just getting kind of desperate.
Where is she, Jeff?
What?
Your wife. Where is she? In the basement?
Yes. She must be through by now. I was waiting for her to come out. Trying to delay it until the last minute, I guess.
I'll have to get her, Connors.
You'll treat her gently, won't you, Lieutenant?
Don't worry. I'll treat her gently.
Sally Martin's not mixed up in this, Johnny boy. She was just trying to help her boss out of a jam. Didn't even know what it was.
Don't worry about it, Jeff.
Doesn't make much sense, does it, Johnny? My own wife. Firebug. I suppose maybe it was our home burning. Boy, I don't know. Just doesn't make much sense. She was a lovely girl, Johnny. I wish you'd known her then. She was such a lovely girl.
Expense account item 9, $37.40. Hotel bill and miscellaneous. Expense account item 10, $119.10, airfare back to Hartford. Expense account total, $309.25. Remarks? I've seen fires burn everything from blocks of tenements to a hole in a rug. But this is the first time I ever saw one actually burn the heart out of a man. I don't ever want to see it again. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 25th, 1954, on CBS, John Lund, the star. 11 broadcasts later, he would be off of the air in place of Gerald Moore, who was trying out for the part, and he lost to actor Bob Bailey, turning out to be the most popular among the six or so actors that portrayed Johnny Dollar on radio. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce star in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. From the Mutual Broadcasting System, from October 22, 1945, we hear The Great Gandolfo.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now let's visit with our good friend, Dr. Watson. I know he's expecting us.
Come in, come in, come in. Good evening, Mr. Bartell.
Evening, Doctor. Oh, you have the old black tin dispatch box out again,
yes,
I see.
Yes, my boy. I've just been refreshing my memory on one or two points in connection with tonight's story. Draw up a chair.
Thanks.
That's it, that's it. The tobacco's in the jar beside you.
Thanks, Doctor. You know, I'm particularly excited about hearing your story tonight. Last week, you told us that Sherlock Holmes' brother, Mycroft Holmes, took part in the adventure.
That's quite right, Mr. Bartell.
I didn't even know Mr. Holmes had a brother. I wish you'd tell me something about him.
Well, Mycroft was 7 years older than Sherlock, but the difference between them was amazing. While Holmes was lean and consumed with a burning energy, his elder brother was fat and lazy. And yet Holmes has often told me that Mycroft was his superior in powers of observation and deduction.
Well, now that you've thoroughly whetted my appetite, Doctor, how's about it?
Very well, my boy. I suppose this story really began in Mycroft Holmes's room at the Foreign Office in London. Although I've said he was a lazy man, he did hold a position of considerable importance. In fact, you may remember that on more than one occasion, Holmes has said, Mycroft is the British government. But to get back to my story. It's on a June morning in 1912, just before the First World War, that a young man in the Foreign Office named Guy Travers stood talking to Mycroft Holmes, who sat sprawled in an armchair before him, his feet resting on another chair, his cupped hands cradling his ample stump.
Mr. Holmes? I say, Mr. Holmes, you haven't gone to sleep, have you, sir?
No, Travers, I'm not asleep. I'm just waiting for you to get to the point.
Well, sir, the point is that I'm on the track of a most elusive female spy.
Dear me, how exhausting.
She's dangerous, sir, very dangerous. She's not only a collector of information, but a sort of central clearinghouse of military secrets as well.
You seem to be a little young, Travers, to be on such a case.
I asked for the assignment, sir.
Why? Female spies aren't as glamorous as they sound, you know.
No one knows that better than I do, sir. You see, my brother got mixed up with this girl 2 years ago. He was cashiered from his regiment and committed suicide.
I'm sorry, Travers. Tell me what you found out about her. You say you've been on her track?
I've traced her to a number of seaside towns, but she keeps slipping through my fingers.
Have you a list of the towns?
Yes, sir. Here you are.
No, no, no. You read them to me.
Well, I first got on her track at Torquay. From there, I trailed her to Weymouth, Bournemouth, Portsmouth, Bognor, Worthing, Hove, Brighton, and...
I trust you drew the obvious conclusion.
I think I did, sir. Several of those towns are naval bases.
No, no, no. The list you've just read me is a recognized theatrical circuit.
Oh, I never thought of that.
The simplest way to track down your spy is to find whether she was appearing in either a play or variety act in all of the towns on the dates covered by your inquiries.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I'll do that at once, and then I'll report back to you.
Oh, very well, if you must. Close the door quietly, won't you? I'm confoundedly sleepy.
Mr. Holmes? Mr. Holmes, you haven't gone to sleep again, have you, sir?
Oh, it's you, Travers. Well, what did you find out?
A great deal, sir. The only theatrical show that was appearing at all of those towns was a magician's act called The Great Gandolfo.
I trust you went and saw the performance.
Yes, sir. Last night at Hastings.
And?
The magician's assistant was a girl who looked exactly like the one I saw my brother with 2 years ago.
Did you go backstage and talk to her?
Yes, sir. But it's a funny thing. For though she looked exactly like the other girl, I swear she isn't the same one. This girl seemed utterly charming and sincere when she told me she'd never heard of my brother.
That's the danger of putting you young fellows on a case of this kind. A beautiful woman and a good actress can fool you 9 times out of 10. What's your next move, Travers?
Well, sir, I was hoping perhaps you might come down with me and see the act. It's playing at Eastbourne tomorrow. It's not very far, sir.
Stir my 20 stone. Leave the comforts of my office and club to track a spy. No, my boy. However, your mention of Eastbourne gives me an idea.
Yes, sir?
My young brother Sherlock is living on a bee farm a few miles outside Eastbourne. He might help you.
He's a great detective, isn't he, sir?
I have never regarded him as one, though I will admit that for a man with such a shocking excess of physical energy, he possesses a relatively superior mind. Yes, yes, go and ask Sherlock.
Thank you, sir, I will.
Tell him that if he can't solve the case, I'll do it for him, and without leaving London.
And so, Mr. Holmes, I did as your brother suggested and came down here to Eastbourne to tell you about the case.
I quite understand, Mr. Travers.
Pretty interesting story it is, too, my boy. I'm certainly glad that I happen to be staying down here with you, Holmes. You'll handle the case, of course.
I'm undecided, old fellow. The problem presents some interesting possibilities, and yet my life here among the bees has taken on a pleasant and soothing pattern. Oh, I hate to disturb
it. Oh, come, Holmes. It'll be good for you to get away from your wretched bees for a few days.
I forgot to tell you, Mr. Holmes. As I left your brother, he told me that if you couldn't solve the case, he'd do it for you, without leaving London.
Dear old Mycroft, he meant that as a challenge. Hand me the paper, will you, Watson?
Yeah.
Thanks, old chap.
Oh, what are you looking for?
The amusement guide. Ah, here it is. Devonshire Theatre, Eastbourne. Twice, nightly variety, 6:30 and 9. The Great Gandolfo, King of Magic.
You mean you'll come to the theatre with me tonight, Mr. Holmes?
Certainly. I can't allow Mycroft's challenge to go unanswered, and I'm sure that Dr. Watson will accompany us when I tell him Miss Sissy Gitana is also appearing on the bill singing, an old favorite of his. There was I, waiting at the church, waiting at the church, waiting at the church.
I found he left me in the lurch. Lord, how it did upset me. At once he sent me round a note. Here's the very note. This is what he wrote. Can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me.
That's a most entertaining woman, Sissy Gitana. And dash good looking, too. My wife won't let me.
The Great Gandolfo is next, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, I was just studying the program. Ha, ha, ha. He's not exactly modest in his claims, is he? The Great Gandolfo, the world-staggering illusionist. Presenting the ceiling cabinet mystery assisted by Miss Florine Lasseur. Oh, dear me, how very florid.
I must say I love this old music hall flavor. I remember going to the Palace Theatre a few years ago to see a perfectly charming girl who wore a white dress that made her look like a little white rabbit. That dress did look frightfully becoming, I must say. I sent my card round the stage door with some flowers, of course, but to my amazement...
That's a fascinating story, old fellow, but I'm afraid you'll have to finish it later. The curtain's going up.
There he is. That's the Great Gandolfo.
By Jove, this assistant's very attractive, isn't she?
Listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be here before you tonight. I may say that the ceiling cabinet mystery that I am about to present has entertained and perplexed half a dozen of the crown kings of Europe, together with their queens.
Come, don't talk so much. Get on with the trick.
And I may say, I'm hoping that you, ladies and gentlemen, will give me the same courtesy and attention that was given me by the royalty I have just mentioned. Now, before I present my illusion, I should like to ask for 2 volunteers from the audience who will come up here beside me on the stage so that I may be watched. Two volunteers, please.
Wait for us here, Mr. Travers.
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Come on, Watson.
You mean that we're going up on the stage?
Yes, it's a wonderful opportunity.
Do I see 2 gentlemen rising? Splendid. 2 gentlemen are coming up from the audience. 2 gentlemen that I have never seen before. Watch the step, please. That's it. Over the footlights and onto the stage. That's right. And now, sir, have you ever seen me before?
Never.
And you, sir? Don't be afraid to speak up, sir.
No, I haven't.
Miss Lesueur, please see that the gentlemen are seated. I thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to watch me closely. You will observe that there is a wooden cabinet on the stage. There is also another cabinet of the same shape and size hanging high above me, which you can all see. A glass of water, please, Miss Lesueur.
Well, go on. Put a sock in it.
What did you say, sir?
You heard. You ain't got cloth ears.
We will dispense with the glass of water. Now, my assistant, Miss Florine Lesueur, will step into this cabinet on the stage. I want you two gentlemen to watch very closely. Miss Lesueur is now lying inside the cabinet. Is she not?
Yes, she is.
Very well. I close the lid. So, I lock it with these bolts. And now, I ask one of you gentlemen to attach this padlock to the box. You, sir, will you oblige me?
Very well.
I thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, before your eyes, you have seen Miss Lesueur enter a cabinet on this stage. A cabinet that has been bolted and padlocked. You can still see the duplicate cabinet hanging above me by an attachment of wires and pulleys. I now count a one, a two, a three, and fire this revolver at the cabinet above me. Now, if you two gentlemen will kindly help me, we will lower the ceiling cabinet to the stage. You will notice that this cabinet is also bolted and padlocked. I will ask one of you two gentlemen to unbolt it. I thank you, sir. And to this gentleman, I shall hand the key of the padlock. Kindly unlock it, sir. I thank you. And now, if you will both raise the lid of the cabinet. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is Miss Florine Lesueur.
Why did we have to leave, Holmes? I was having a wonderful time.
I'm sorry to drag you away, Watson, but there's work to be done.
Mr. Holmes, if you want to go backstage, I'll introduce you to Miss Lesueur.
Oh, that's a splendid idea.
Before we do that, Mr. Travers, there's one important fact I want to know.
What is it, sir?
I presume you have a dossier of the available facts concerning this spy?
Yes, sir. Everything that we've been able to find out.
Among that evidence, do you by any chance have any fingerprint records?
Yes, sir, I do.
Splendid. Then let's go at once to the nearest police station and compare the fingerprints on this glass with those in your possession.
Where did you get that glass, Holmes?
You remember that Miss Lesueur, before she entered that cabinet on the stage, handed Gandolfo a glass of water.
You mean that's the glass?
Why else should I be carrying a drinking glass with me, old chap?
Very neat, Mr. Holmes, and right under the nose of a magician, too.
Well, I'm not exactly inept at the practice of legerdemain myself, Mr. Travers. Come on. Let's have a talk with that local fingerprint expert, shall we?
Mr. Holmes, the fingerprints on this glass you brought me are not the same as the ones shown in this record.
You're positive?
Oh, absolutely, sir.
Just as I thought. I'm much obliged to you.
Always glad to help a gentleman like you, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you and good night. Come on, Travers. Watson.
I wish you'd explain what you're up to, Holmes.
So do I, sir. I'm completely in the dark.
Surely it's obvious. The only way Gandolfo's trick could be done is by using twin girls, dressed identically, of course. One in the cabinet on the stage and the other in the cabinet hanging from the ceiling. I don't know whether you noticed it, Watson, but there were some small holes drilled around the base of the box, undoubtedly to enable its occupant to breathe.
By George, of course. That would explain why the girl I spoke to didn't seem to know me, or my brother when I spoke of him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in any case, how better could a spy hide herself from a role where her employer, a magician, must, by the very nature of his trick, deny her existence? The question is, which girl is the spy? This fingerprint test has given us the answer.
You mean it isn't the girl on the stage, the one who assisted Gandolfo?
It certainly is not, old fellow. Your spy will be in the cabinet, suspended high above the stage of the Devonshire Theatre at 9 o'clock this evening. But this time, we will watch the performance from the audience.
Now, watch watch me closely, ladies and gentlemen. There is no deception. One, a two, a three. And now, if you two gentlemen will kindly help me, we will untie the ropes and lower the ceiling cabinet to the stage.
Holmes, we must never get away.
Don't worry, old chap. But keep your eyes skinned. You may have a surprise for us.
And I will now ask one of you two gentlemen to unbolt the cabinet. I thank you, sir. And now, if this gentleman will take the key and unlock the padlock, I thank you, sir. And now, if you will both raise the lid of the cabinet, I thank you. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is Miss Florine Lasseur. Miss Lasseur, step out, please. Miss Lasseur, bring down the curtain. There's been an accident.
Come on, Watson. Let's get up on the stage.
Right, you are, Holmes.
What happened, sir?
It's Miss Lasseur. She's been injured.
I'm a doctor. Let me look at her.
I'm afraid she's beyond the help of doctors, Watson. Look at that bullet wound in her head. She's been murdered.
Sherlock Holmes comes out of retirement to teach our police force how to handle a case, does he?
Sergeant Bluff, you're being ridiculous. I'm not trying to teach the police anything. You follow your own line of investigation and I'll follow mine.
And supposing I say I don't want private detectives poking their nose into a police investigation?
Then, my good man, I shall report your conduct to the local chief of police and obtain the necessary permission.
No need to get uppity about it, Mr. Holmes, but too many cooks spoil the broth, you know.
Oh, an extremely profound remark, Sergeant. And now, if you'll excuse me, I've work to do.
And so have I. And we'll see who gets to the bottom of this first. I'm going to Condolfo's dressing room.
Holmes, I'm worried about the dead girl's twin sister. I've been looking for her everywhere, and no one seems to have seen her since the tragedy occurred.
Naturally, my dear chap, you'd hardly expect her to reveal the secret of the cabinet trick by exposing the fact that the dead girl had a twin.
I never thought of that. But we saw her there on the stage when the trick started. Seems to me that she's in great danger.
She is in very great danger. But don't worry. I've taken the precaution of having her guarded.
Oh? How, Holmes?
I'll explain that to you later. In the meantime, we have to work fast. It appears that Sergeant Bluff is out to try and show me up by solving the case first. That makes the second challenge I've received today.
Well, Mr. Holmes, and how are you getting along?
Splendidly, thanks. And you?
I'm beaten. I don't mind admitting it. I thought at first the one man it couldn't be was Gandolfo because he was on the stage all the time. But then it seemed to me that he might have fired a live bullet when he shot at the box on the ceiling.
But the angle from the stage wouldn't coincide with the bullet hole in the bottom of the box, Sergeant. That shot must have been fired from the audience below.
Mr. Holmes, you know who did it, don't you?
Yes, Sergeant, I do.
I wish you'd tell me, Mr. Holmes.
It should be obvious, Sergeant. Watson, you examined the corpse. Please tell the sergeant your findings.
The girl was lying on her back in the box. There was a small hole in her forehead and a large one in the nape of her neck.
Exactly. And since the point of entrance of a bullet is smaller than the point of exit, it proves that she must have been shot lying in the box from above. Once the box was in position over the audience, she could have been shot only from below. Therefore, the girl had already been killed when the box was hoisted to the ceiling.
By Jove, yes. And only one person could have done that.
Only two.
Oh, how do you figure that out, Mr. Holmes?
The dead girl's sister had the same opportunity as the great Gandolfo himself.
Of course she had. Now I see why you were having her watched, Mr. Holmes. And if you'll excuse me saying so, sir, I begin to think it's a good thing you're on this case after all.
Oh, that's very generous of you, Sergeant. And now perhaps if you will do me the favor of keeping an eye on Mr. Gandolfo yourself?
Of course I will, sir.
Where are we going, Holmes?
To the Jolly Fisherman Hotel to call on Miss Lasseur.
How do you know she's there?
I just received a message from young Travers. He followed her on my instructions as she left the theater. Come on, old chap. There's no time to be lost. Ah, there you are, Travers. Miss Lasseur is still here, I trust?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. She's up in her room.
I wonder if you'd mind asking her to come down and see me. I'm sure that we can talk privately in the lounge over there.
Right you are, Mr. Holmes. I'll go and get her.
What are you going to say to Miss Lasseur, Holmes?
That depends on her attitude, old chap. Come on, let's go into the lounge, shall we?
Well, it's a lucky thing that you had her followed.
It was an obvious precaution, Watson. You see, I realized from the very nature of the cabinet trick that Miss Lasseur would have to leave the theater after escaping through the trap door below the cabinet that was on the stage before her twin sister descended from the cabinet that was suspended from the ceiling.
And she doesn't know that her sister's been murdered, huh?
If she is innocent, she doesn't. And if she is innocent, then we'll know that our murderer is Gandolfo. Shh. Here she comes.
I've told Miss Lasseur that you want to talk to her privately, Mr. Holmes.
If it's the act you want to talk about, Mr. Holmes, I've nothing to say. Magicians have a code of honor, you know.
I quite appreciate that fact, Miss Lasseur. Won't you sit down?
What do you want with me?
I have news for you. News of your twin sister.
I haven't got a twin sister.
My friend knows exactly how the cabinet trick is done, my dear young lady.
Yes, you might as well tell the truth, Miss Lasseur.
Well, all right then, so I have a twin sister. What of it? No crime in that, is there? What are you getting at?
I want you to believe that I'm here to help you, my dear. You're going to need help and courage.
What are you getting at? But come on, tell me.
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Miss Lasseur, your sister is dead.
Dead? Huh. I don't believe it.
I'm afraid it's true. She was murdered.
You're lying. This is a trick. You're trying to make me give myself away.
I'm trying to get at the truth. Your sister was found shot through the head when the cabinet was lowered to the stage tonight.
I still don't believe it.
Why should my friend lie to you?
How was your sister the last time you saw her for the commencement of the act?
No different from any other time.
Who was responsible for superintending her entry into the cabinet?
Gandolfo, or me. She used to go into it before the performance when the stage was dark and deserted.
Did you help her enter the box tonight?
No. Gandolfo did.
You knew, of course, of your sister's activities.
How do you mean?
That she was engaged in espionage.
That's not true.
Very well, Miss Lasseur. If you won't be honest with me, I'm afraid I'll have to turn you over to the police. I think you'll find their methods are a little more crude than mine, though.
The police? Oh, no. No, don't do that, Mr. Holmes. All right, I'll tell you everything. Gandolfo's got me so frightened of him. I was lying to you. I knew that my sister was working for him. I tried to stop her, but she loved money. And Gandolfo gave her plenty of that. They had a row before the show tonight. She knew you were on the stage at the first performance, Mr. Holmes. Gandolfo had spotted you, too. She was frightened. Said she knew you'd catch her, and she wanted to run away. Gandolfo told her that she had to appear tonight. And they were still arguing about it when they left the dressing room. The dirty swine killed her because he was afraid she'd give him away. And now he'll kill me, too.
Don't worry, my dear. The great Gandolfo will be beyond the help of magic before this night is out.
Yes, he'll be behind bars where he belongs.
Travers.
Yes, sir.
And stay here with Miss Lasseur, will you? We'll be back later. At the moment, there is unfinished business awaiting us at the Devonshire Theatre.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I can't tell you how grateful I am. Gandolfo's safely in prison, thanks to you, and now you tells me you don't want no credit in the case.
Oh, my dear Sergeant, I'm really a bee farmer, you know. In any case, I want to restore your faith in private detectives. The next time you meet one, I'm sure you won't be so so unfriendly, shall I say?
I'm humble, sir. I'm very humble, and I thank you very kindly for all you've done. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Holmes, this telegram arrived for you at the theater while you were away, and here you are, sir.
Oh, thank you, Sergeant Buck.
No, sir, it's me that should be thanking you, sir.
Who on earth knew that you were at the theater tonight?
I will soon find out.
Well, what does it say, Holmes?
It's from my brother, Mycroft.
Mycroft? What's he going to say?
Oh, really, it's quite humiliating. After all, he said he hadn't... He wouldn't have to, and he never did leave his armchair in London. Listen to this. Have just checked on Gandolfo's repertoire of magic tricks. You will find spy in box suspended from ceiling of theater. Elementary, eh, my dear Sherlock?
Why, Joe Holmes, he really is amazing, isn't he?
He is also a prophet, old chap.
Prophet? How do you mean?
Well, he indicates the handwriting on the wall. I'm past my prime. I'm too old for alert detection. It's back to me bee farm, old fella. It's back to me bees.
Well, Doctor, that was a swell story. I bet it was an interesting case to work on.
Yes, it certainly was. I've always had a fancy for the theater, you know.
What you really mean, Doctor, is you always had an eye for a pretty girl.
Mr. Bartell, you're a very blunt fellow.
Why not? I must admit, I like to look at a pretty girl myself.
You, Mr. Bartell?
Why shouldn't I like to look at a pretty girl?
Oh, go right ahead and look, my dear fellow. Go right ahead. You just sort of surprised me a bit, that's all. I never thought you gave a moment's consideration to anything but Petri wine.
Now you're really pulling my leg. I must admit, I do talk a lot about Petri wine, but after all, Doctor, it's worth talking about. Because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Well, Doctor, how's about giving us a clue to next week's Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Well, now, next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a most unusual story that took place aboard a small steamship as it plowed through the stormy seas of the Indian Ocean. I call the adventure Murder by Moonlight. Oh, before I say good night, ladies and gentlemen, remember that on Saturday, October the 27th, the nation will observe Navy Day. This is your opportunity to thank your fleet for its magnificent contribution towards victory. Don't forget, will you?
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Second Stain.
Sherlock Holmes, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 22nd, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of mysteries on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.